Okay, I think we can start. Boker Tov, everybody. Nice to see those who I see and the others who I can see their boxes. Okay, we'll pick up a little bit where we left off on Friday, continuing going through with little points in the Haggadah. So we spoke on Friday how matzah is both the food of slavery and redemption, right? Halachmanya, this is the crummy, bread of affliction we ate in Egypt, a slave, because that's what you give a slave. You're not going to waste giving him bread. It's easy to make. It's cheap. It's filling. It lasts long, etc. On the other hand, we all know the basic reason, the reason given in the Chumash, that halachmanya, that's not given in the Chumash. The reason given in the Torah is because we left in a hurry. Everybody knows that. We didn't have time to bake matzah, even though they were told 2 weeks in advance. We didn't talk about that this week, but, they were given 2 weeks notice, but okay. They left unexpectedly. They didn't have hurry. They didn't know exactly when they were going out, and they didn't have time to bake matzah. So we explained that matzah has to be both. That freedom is only really meaningful if you appreciate where you came from. If the freedom motivates you to help those who are still enslaved and helps those help others. So we transition from the matzah of slavery to the matzah of freedom. That's what we said. Like Rabbi Mintz had mentioned, we begin the Seder, we're Avadim Hayinu, that's Halachmanya, and then Vayotzienu Hashem Misham, and God removed us, took us out of Egypt. So that's the matzah of Rabban Gamliel, the matzah that we ate because we're the redemption, because we're happy. So we transition from slavery to freedom. I thought of this yesterday on Shabbos in the middle of the shiur I was giving in shul yesterday. This sort of somebody asked a question, popped into my mind. Maybe we can say the Haggadah, it's in reverse. We're going from this is a more negative interpretation. We're going from freedom to slavery. What do I mean? So here's what I mean. You'll tell me if you like this. The mitzvah of Maror today. So the mitzvah of Maror today is only a rabbinic mitzvah. There is no, I don't know. Listen, we observe the rabbinic mitzvah, but there is no mitzvah min haTorah tomorrow. Why not?
Because there's no carbon.
Because there's no korban Pesach. And the Torah says, "Am matzot umarorim yachluha." Right, the key ingredient at the key ingredient, the key, the main course of the Pesach menu that the Torah describes the menu is tzliyesh. You have to have the korban Pesach roasted, barbecue lamb, delicious. Am matzot umarorim yachluha. You have to eat it together with matzah and maror. So the Gemara says we no longer have korban Pesach. We don't have tzliyesh. So therefore, the matzah and the maror went away. So maybe matzah is also a rabbinic mitzvah. So there are actually opinions like that, that this will maybe come as a little bit of a shock to people. But there is an opinion that the matzah today is a rabbinic mitzvah. Okay, Purim is also a rabbinic mitzvah. Chanukah is a rabbinic mitzvah. But still, we somehow perceive that matzah's got to be, can't just be a rabbinic mitzvah. And that is correct. We assume it's a biblical mitzvah. Why is it a biblical mitzvah?
Be'erev tochlu
There you go, because there's a separate verse that tells us to eat matzah. In other words, we have two verses to tell us to eat matzah. One telling us to eat the matzah with the korban Pesach. I want to eat alone. And later on in Re'eh, the Torah tells us to eat matzah 7 days because you left in a hurry, whatever. So we assume there's an independent reason to eat matzah. So it dawned upon me that really there's two reasons we eat matzah, or there are two occasions. We eat matzah with the korban Pesach. And by the way, that's what Rabban Gamliel says. Rabban Gamliel is talking, Kosher lo omar shlosha dvarim elu b'Pesach. If you don't say these three things, Pesach, matzah, umaror, he's clearly linking the Pesach, matzah, umaror. When you eat the matzah with the Korban Pesach, that's the matzah, because God took us out of Egypt. That's the matzah of redemption. And you know what? Basically, the key ingredient is the meat. And matzah, therefore, tastes very good. You have a little wafer. You go to a fancy wedding, you take, they have the little wafers, and you put some herring on, I don't know, the kiddush, you put something. That's the matzah we're supposed to eat. When we went into exile, when the temple was destroyed, we can't eat that matzah. We no longer eat matzah with Korban Pesach. Matzah is a standalone, which it is. So matzah now becomes the main part of the meal. And first of all, it doesn't taste very good. Have a little bit of matzah with the Korban Pesach, it tastes great. But to have a lot of matzah, like, the size of the olive, but somebody asked me yesterday, right at the beginning, how big is my olive? We can discuss that later. How big the olive of matzah is that you have to eat. When you have to eat a ton of matzah, But all of a sudden, that matzah is now the matzah of lechemoni. That's halachmanya. So it's unfortunate. In other words, once the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, we're not eating matzah with korban pesach. We eat matzah alone. Matzah alone, oh no, that's the bread of slavery. And therefore, the Haggadah begins with halachmanya. With we're making an introduction, right? Halachmanya is in Aramaic. I think we spoke about that on Friday. I mentioned I gave Baruch Hashem. I gave so many shurim this week on Pesach between teaching and chat and shul. I don't remember what, even though I have notes here, I don't always follow exactly my notes. In case you never noticed that. So I don't remember always what I say at which shir. So you have to correct me if I said it already. But the halachmanya is in Aramaic. The whole seder is in Hebrew. Because the whole Seder is meant for Israel, the Beit HaMikdash. Hebrew is the language of the Jewish people. Obviously, the language of redemption is Hebrew. Aramaic is the language of the exile. So before we start the Seder, and I said, like, the Seder is like we're in a dream world. Four cups of wine, the Jews are redeemed, the world is at peace. Unfortunately, that's not true. But that's what we do on Pesach night. We pretend. We have to pretend. We're leaving Egypt. Everything is wonderful. But before we have this great pretend, and it's nice once in a while to dream, because the dream is supposed to motivate us to make the dream actually come true. And so we're not dreaming because it could be, because we have to make it be. But before we do that, so we make an announcement, halachmanya, you know, before you go off in the Wizard of Oz and she falls asleep, whatever, you have to make a dream we're in the real world. And in the real world, halachmanya, it's not so good. It's not so good. And, this is the poor bread that they ate. And therefore, the matzah is, unfortunately, historically, the matzah went from the bread of redemption to the bread of slavery. And that's why we make the announcement. It's really supposed to be like Rabban Gamliel, Omer Koshel, Omer Shlosh, Dorim, Eilud, Yet Pesach Matzah Mar. No, no. Today, it's just halachmanya. It's we ate it all alone. So I don't know. I thought that was, I think it makes a lot of sense. I never heard anybody else say that. I'm always nervous when I say something that nobody else said, because, you know, I can be wrong. But I think it makes a lot of sense. By the way, when Rabban Gamliel says that whoever doesn't say these three things on Pesach didn't fulfill his obligation, what obligation didn't they fulfill? Right? Rabban Gamliel says, Kol Shalom Amar Shlosh Dvarim Eilu Pesach. Whoever doesn't say these three things on Pesach did not fulfill their obligation.
Magid.
Maybe see for you see us Mitzrayim.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I remember, according to the Rosh, Tshuves Rosh, it's not about the mitzvah of Haggadah, it's the choiva of the Korban Pesach.
It's a whole, okay, excellent. So, but basically, it's a machloket. I think most people, and that was the first three answers I heard, you don't fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story of Magid, of Sifur Yitzchak Mitzrayim. In order to tell the story properly, you have to talk about Pesach, Matzah, or God passed over our home. That's the essence of the story. Eat Matzah because we left in a hurry. That's the essence of the story. And we have to remember, but initially, the way we remembered, to continue what I was saying, the bitterness is the maror. Now, unfortunately, maror is only rabbinic. So the way we biblically remember the negative today is the matzah, because the matzah, we don't have the Korban Pesach. That's really, actually, it fits in there very, very nicely. Initially, the negative is the maror. Okay, so you have to tell the story from maror to matzah to Pesach. By the way, it's interesting, we do the order not historically correct, as we've done many times. We're not telling a story as a story. We're telling the message of the story. It should be Maror Pesach Matzah, right? Historically. First, we have the Maror, bitterness. Then God passed over our home, Pesach. And then we left in a hurry, Matzah. So it should be Maror Pesach Matzah. But we do Pesach Matzah Maror because we're doing it in importance. The key item is the Pesach. Secondarily is the Matzah. And the Maror is a little bit less important. And that's why the Torah has a separate mitzvah to eat matzah. There's no separate mitzvah to eat maror. That's it. Matzah is important to not being stands on its own. You don't have the Korban. It's actually very interesting. I would have thought the exact opposite. If I don't have the Korban Pesach, I dafka to eat maror. In other words, when I don't have the Korban Pesach, that's more important than maror. But that's not how the halacha developed. I don't know why. I'm just thinking that that's very interesting. You would think in exile, maror is more important. No, that's probably why the rabbis insist that we eat maror. Yeah. But from a Torah perspective, you don't eat maror without the Korban Pesach. We don't want you to eat maror.
Maybe, Rabbi Kelman, You don't need a mitzvah to have maror. When you're in galus, the maror is there. You don't need a mitzvah.
I hear that. So that, I don't know if that works in America. Right. Maybe that worked in Poland. I'm not sure that works in our exile that we choose to live in exile. That's the truth. I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, in the 1700s, they didn't choose to live in exile. We do choose to live in, at least I chose to live in exile.
There's maybe another reason for it. When you eat meat, you need the maror for the digestion.
Why?
When you eat meat, you need some vegetables.
Yeah, I don't know, but maror, have nice vegetables. Have karpas. Eat the korban pesach and karpas, not maror.
Yeah, but
and that's the whole idea. The maror is tempered. It's not on its own with korban pesach. It doesn't taste so bad.
According to the Orachaim, the Orachaim gives, I think, 10 reasons for the maror. According to one of his reasons, it's not about the bitterness, but it's about cherut, that you eat meat with vegetables and salad.
Yeah, of course, the pesach matzah, that's like having a falafel, you know, like, it's better than a falafel, but you think about it, meat and vegetables and et cetera. But the maror is not a standalone. We don't want to eat the maror standalone. Even today, we don't eat the maror as a standalone. You dip it in charoset. And the reason one of the basic reasons we dip it in charoset is to take out the sharpness of the maror. We don't want a Jew to eat just maror. But anyway, so that's the first explanation, that if you don't tell the story properly, you're not telling the story properly unless you elaborate on the reason for Pesach Matzah Maror. There's a second explanation that you were alluding to. No, you don't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah if you don't tell the why we eat matzah. It's very different. Normally, we assume mitzvah don't need kavanah. It's a big discussion when, what, but let's assume you shake a lulav. And you don't know why you're shaking the lulav. It's nice to know why you're shaking the lulav, but you fulfill the mitzvah. You eat, you light Hanukkah candles because you see your neighbor lights. Okay, it's Christmas time. Everybody lights candles. I don't know. And you don't know why you're lighting candles. So you fulfill the mitzvah. You don't have to know why you're doing the mitzvah. But here, according to some, Rabbi Gamliel is saying, no. We're not just eating matzah. If you don't understand we're eating matzah, not only did you tell the story, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. We halachically don't accept that view. The halach accepts the view that if somebody ate matzah, they shoved it down his throat, he fulfills the mitzvah. But still, there is this idea in the commentaries, you have to know the reason. We do have this on Sukkos. On Sukkos, this is the first halach in the Torah. The Torah, the 14th century code on which the Shulchan Aruch is based, the Shulchan Aruch based himself on the Torah. Rav Yaakov Bal HaTurim, the son of the Rosh, who you just quoted, the son of Rabbeinu Asher. So the Torah begins Hilchot Sukkah, that telling us the reason we sit in a Sukkah is because it's the clouds of glory. Remember, Pesach and Sukkah go together. Right? Everybody knows that, right? Where did the Jewish people eat matzah? They didn't have time when they left Egypt. You know where they ate matzah? In Sukkot.
In the Sukkah.
No. I don't know. Yeah, maybe in a Sukkah, correct? Because that's why we sit in Sukkot, because they keep a Sukkot, Hoshapti Epinesho, the man you do door taken, keep a Sukkot, Hoshapti Israel, Botsio Tamir, it's Mitzrayim. Right? That's the other question, too. Why don't we celebrate Sukkot now? Have Pesach and Sukkot, all the people who cook that love it. Get Pesach and Sukkot in one holiday. Have to stay there in the Sukkah. That is the Torah's question. We sat in Sukkot when we left Egypt, right? Sukkot and Pesach go together. But not only did they eat matzah in Sukkot, because that's where they ate everything, the name of the city they ate matzah was in Sukkot. Just let me quickly find it. Right? By Yachanut B'Sukkot. Isn't that what we say in B'Shach? The first place they went was to Sukkot. Vayisu B'nei Israel. Let me just find it. Yeah, by Yisub in Israel, mi Ramses Sukkota. The Jewish people left from Ramses to go to Sukkot. Remember, Yaakov and Esav meet at Sukkot, right? It's a different Sukkot. Obviously, I've said many times, names and places in the Bible, you don't have to interpret them literally. They have deeper meanings. So it's not, I don't know if there's really a place on the maps. That in the Torah, there was the first place they went. They left from Ramses, you know, one of the Pharaohs. Like, always, city in Egypt was called Ramses. And they went to Sukkota, and that's where they ate matzah. So it's an amazing thing. It's very beautiful. The Torah is clearly linking Pesach and Sukkot. And they ate in Sukkot, and probably, yes, they probably ate in huts too, yes. So now, on Sukkot, the Torah rules that you have to know why you're sitting in the Sukkot, because I just said the Pasuk, Leman Yedu Dorotechem. The reason you sit in the Sukkah is Leman, for the purpose of the word Leman. So you should know that God took us, saved us through Sukkot. Kibbe Sukkot Oshavti B'nei Yisrael. I saved the Jewish people through the mitzvah of Sukkot in Egypt, and that's why we have to sit in Sukkot. So if you don't know that reason, you didn't fulfill the verse tells you have to know the reason. So you have to do the reason. So that's what some want to say, the same thing on the matzah. If you don't know why you're eating the matzah, then you don't fulfill your obligation of matzah. By the way, why isn't Sukkot on Pesach?
The weather.
What do you mean?
It's obvious because you want to do it in a season when it's not obvious that everyone else does it.
Right. So that's the answer of the Torah, right? That's the famous answer. I believe that if we did it in Nisan, no, that's when you open up your cottages, right? When the people open, you know, it's, that's okay. That makes sense. He's not doing it for the mitzvah. We just said, so because you have to do it for the mitzvah. Nobody goes to their cottage in September, opens up their cottage season in September. So that's why we do it. Of course, you understand that's only the Sukkot. If we did Sukkot on Pesach, we'd still take the Lulav and Etrog in Tishrei. You know that there are two holidays on Sukkot. There's Chag HaSif and Chag HaSukkot. And if you look in the Torah clearly distinguishes them. When the Torah finishes the holiday, it says, Ach, Bayom HaRishon, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, on the first day, take a Pre-Eitz Adar, Kapot Marim, because like all holidays, even Pesach, there's an agricultural component, the Omer. Right, we on Pesach we only focus on history, and so we today don't focus on agriculture. We don't live in Israel, and the mitzvah don't apply anymore. But Sukkot, it's only the Torah's only asking why we don't sit in the Sukkah when we say the Manishtana. Why is this night different from all other nights? Right, we're sitting in the Sukkah. There's a lot to be said for that. The link between Sukkot and Pesach. But anyway, getting back here, so Pesach Matzah Umaror. You have to explain why you're eating matzah, both as part of the story, and I would say as part of the mitzvah to eat the matzah. But that's how you're supposed to eat the matzah. We today can't eat the matzah like that. We today have halach manya. As Rabbi Alman pointed out, based on the pasuk, be'erev tochlu matzah, can't eat matzah at night. Now, the Haggadah makes a big deal about this at night. And I, you know, especially today and with daylight savings time, it's a real pain. I live in Toronto. You know, candle lighting this week is when 8:15 is candle lighting. So Seder Kochavim is like, I don't know, 9 o'clock. It's a little bit crazy to start the Seder so late. I remember the good olden days when we changed the clock at the end of April. Everybody remember that? Like 15, we used to change the clock at the end of April. Then they moved it to the first week in April, so then depended on the year. Sometimes Pesach, yes, sometimes Pesach, no. Now it's in March. It's like, anyway, what can you do? So you have to eat matzah. Now, Yachomi Rosh Chodesh? No, can't be Rosh Chodesh, because it says in the Torah, celebrate this month. Yachomi Vod Yom? Okay, I'll make like I do on Friday nights. I'll make Shabbos early. I'll go to the 7 o'clock minyan. Start to God at a normal time. No. Isn't that what we say? It's gotta be at when the matzah mar are there, and the mitzvah of matzah, of course, is only at night. Why? Especially if we go by the opinion, I think I spoke about, I don't remember when I spoke about this here. Did the Jewish people leave Egypt in the day or did they leave at night? It is not, the Torah, of course, contradicts itself. Right. When it says Shamor Chodesh Aviv, Kibba Chodesh Aviv Yatzad Mitzrayim Laila, we left at night, and then the Torah says they left at Samayom Hazeh in the middle of the day, and the Egyptians were burying their dead. The Torah, so I don't care how to resolve that contradiction. It was a long time. They started. Who cares? But there's apparently Egypt is connected to both the night and the day. But if you accept the view, I'm just looking for it in the Haggadah. If you accept the view that we left Pesach, we left Egypt in the daytime, which is what a lot of people say. And Rashi quotes, we walked out in the middle, the Egyptians couldn't stop us, right? So why is the mitzvah of matzahs at night? Everything night. And we're so insistent. And
because
as we
they
all know,
ate Korban Pesach at night.
Yeah, why?
Because no, that was
Akat Bechor. This is the only Korban that can only eat at night. Please, Rabbi Alvin, correct me if I'm wrong, but no other Korban cannot be eaten in the day.
Because that's when Makat Bechorot occurred. They were eating that when Makat Bechorot occurred.
So then we should eat it at Chatzot. Okay, so we do can't eat and we eat it until Chatzot. Okay, and that's when Makat Bechorot happened. So, and since Pesach is the main thing, and Matzah and Mara just go with the Pesach, so Pesach, okay, very nice. Okay, could very well be. So we eat the Matzah at night because the Pesach is at night. Okay, I hear that. Makes a lot of sense. But it's just very interesting. I thought it's connected to, like, what do we say in the last song? There should be a day, a night that's not day or night. The whole idea is to convert the night into the day. The idea that redemption is at night is a beautiful idea. Day always represents hope and good things. The night always represents fear. So the Gula comes at night. When we're fear, there's a long night, the night of exile, the night of uncertainty, like when the missiles from Iran were sent last week, you know, people are sitting at night. There's always greater fear at night. So that's the whole point of the Pesach Seder, know that God's revelation comes at night. And that's where we were redeemed. But the Haggadah makes a tremendous emphasis at night. You know, it's got to be at night. Okay, so that's the matzah. The matzah, not only, as we explained on Friday, the matzah, it's the same matzah from slavery to freedom. That's our transition. That's one idea. And now we explain that it's two different matzot. The matzah, the original matzah, the ideal matzah, is the matzah with the Pesach and the Maror. That's the matzah of redemption. That's Rabban Gamliel. And then we say, I'm sorry, guys, let's talk some Aramaic. We're in the exile here. Halak manya. We no longer eat the matzah with the Korban Pesach. This is just the matzah we eat to remind yourself of our slavery. Now we're eating the matzah.
Could I ask a little quick question?
Sure, sure.
You mentioned the Rabban Gamliel for the matzah that, you know, there's the argument that it's for the intention. You have to have the intention. But how would that explain Rabban Gamliel, Moror and Pesach? Do you have to say that? Do you need to have intention for the Moror?
That's what this explanation would hold. Correct. The myth, if you don't know why you're doing Pesach, it doesn't count. I'll tell you where the whole Magid doesn't count if you don't know what you're doing. In other words, the halacha is, I recommend people very much, not only should, you must. Many people must say the Haggadah in English, not may. We may daven in English, right? You're allowed to daven in any language. Because you don't understand Hebrew. Well, why do you mumble words? You don't understand. So daven in English. But the halakha is nunu. If you mumble words in Hebrew and you know you're standing before God and you know you're praying, even though you don't really understand exactly, that's okay. You don't have to understand. You're a creator. You don't have to understand every word. But you're telling a story. If you don't understand the Haggadah, you have not fulfilled your mitzvah. There's no mitzvah. To say Rabban Gamliel Omer and people don't know Hebrew, when you read in Hebrew, you did not fulfill your mitzvah. I remember Rav Schachter emphasizing that with us. It was very important that the Seder people have, you know, their first cousin, their intermarried cousins. I think I mentioned to you in the past, Rav Schachter told us the most important people to invite to your Seder are your intermarried cousins. I mean, it could be your intermarried aunt, your intermarried brother, you know, because it was pretty amazing. He said this in a public lecture. It wasn't even in Shir. I heard him say it at a public lecture in Toronto many years ago, at B'nai Torah. And the shul, Rabbi Marcus was the rabbi, Rabbi Shalom was the rabbi then. And he said, somebody, a question and answer period, and he was talking about, can you invite that? But I said, I'm not. And he said, the most important people to invite to Seder is your intermarried cousin. You want to bring them back to Yiddishkeit to Seder? We invite Shenoya Daily Shul to Russia. Everybody comes. But therefore, you better say it in a language they understand. You don't fulfill any mitzvah if it's said in Hebrew. If you say bitul chametz, in Aramaic, you don't know what you're talking about. You didn't nullify your chametz. You have to know what you're doing. So the Haggadah must be said in English. It must be understood. So it makes a lot of sense to say if I don't. So that's Ishtru, the Magid part. I don't fulfill the story. It makes a lot of sense if I don't say why I'm eating Maror, and I don't say why I'm eating Pesach. I didn't properly, or maybe I didn't at all fulfill my obligation. That's what's saying. I don't think that's the accepted view in halacha. The accepted view in halacha is that it's telling the story you didn't fulfill, but the Haggadah must be said in a language people understand. And we've done it in our house sometimes. We've had people will read parts of the Haggadah only in English. We won't even read if somebody wants to say it on their own in Hebrew, but okay. But we can read it probably only in English. It's not so important to say we spoke on Friday. You don't even have to say the Manishtana at your Seder. That's only for people who don't know how to ask. Okay, I don't recommend anybody not say Manishtana. But it's very clear in the Mishnah, you don't have to. If you ask other questions, you don't have to say Manishtana. And that's why we give it to little kids, right? Because it's not so important. It's for the people who don't know how to ask. That's what the Mishnah said. So we give it to a four-year-old kid who doesn't know how to ask anything else. So it's very nice, very beautiful. They go to nursery and they learn the Manishtana. Okay. Let me say one other interesting point. We were talking about, from Egypt to Israel, right? So I mentioned the idea of the Netziv that on Pesach night we're reliving when we go to our make-believe Haggadah after Halach Manya, after the introduction, that we're in Oz and we're, in this dream world. And we have to pretend we're in the temple. So we wear a kittel, we karpas, we wash before we eat the karpas. We do all that. We eat like Hillel did in the Beit HaMikdash. We remind ourselves of the greatness in the temple. So we're reliving in the temple. So there are really two mitzvot here. There's the mitzvah to remember Egypt, and there's the mitzvah to remember what it was like in the temple. Again, it's all idea of redemption. But I noticed something this year for the first time, and I have to thank you. Let's take a very look, an interesting look at Rabban Gamliel, what Rabban Gamliel says, what we've been talking about. Where are we going here? Rabban Gamliel Omer. Okay, Rabban Gamliel, after Rabban Gamliel talks about Pesach Matzah Maror, the Haggadah says, okay, and every generation you have to see yourself that Egypt is hard to do. As you have to tell your child, Babur Zasa Hashem li b'tzeiti mitzrayim. So where does he derive this from? It says, Babur Zasa, for this purpose, Asa Hashem li, God did for me, b'tzeiti, when I left Egypt. So, of course, in the context of the Torah, it's the father is leaving Egypt, but God is saying, no, this is every generation, the mitzvah to tell your child is for every generation. And therefore, I left Egypt, Asa Hashem li. So then, that's for the end. Then he continues. Not only did God take out our ancestors, he took us out, whatever that means exactly. That's a pasuk we'll get to in a moment. And he removed us, in order to give us the land. Why do we need this second verse? Well, I don't understand. He says, in every generation you have to see, I left Egypt because God took us out of Egypt. Oh, by the way, he also redeemed us. Isn't that what I just said? I just said, in every generation, I have to pretend as if I left Egypt because this is what God did for me when I left Egypt. And I want you to know that God also redeemed me. But I just said God also redeemed me. You understand my question? I hope. So I thought that this is exactly the point. The first half is we left Egypt. I left Egypt. The second half is I got to go to Israel. It's not enough to leave Egypt. And you should know the Seder is a second component. God took us out from there, and it said, in order to bring us to the land of Israel. It's very clear. It's a different verse. It's the same idea. God redeemed us, but there are two stages to the redemption. There is the redemptive stage of leaving Egypt, and then there's the redemptive stage of coming to Israel. These are two different verses. Now, where did this verse "Votanu Hutzi Misham" come from? Where did that verse "Votanu Hutzi Misham" come from? Okay, don't all answer at once. Let's go and take a look. This is like The Haggadah is amazing. Everything's amazing. But it's so...
Is it from Vidi Meiser, Vidi Bikurim?
You have
sorry?
The same thing.
No,
in
it's not the Bikurim. It's not the Bikurim. Okay. So let's go back a little bit. Maybe this will take long. That question, I won't answer the questions right away directly because that's what Jews are supposed to do. Okay. So we all recognize this is the question of the Chacham. Now, unlike the other three questions and unlike the story, we're not in Sefer Shmot, we're in Sefer Dvarim. So we're, quote unquote, 40 years later, we're in the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu was preparing the Jewish people to enter the land of Israel. So if you want to look right before the beginning, the few things before Shema, oh, Shema Yisrael, Hashemah, Bat Hashem, first paragraph, the Shema, and then the Torah tells us, don't get too materialistic. You're going to come, God's going to bring you to the land of Israel. You're going to build Matim Malim, you're going to build big homes. Wow, beautiful homes. And the great, you know, the vineyards and the olive gardens, Hishamer Lecha. You know, when you get too wealthy, it's always a danger. You'll forget God, who took us out of Egypt, right? You're in Israel because God took you out of Egypt. Don't forget that God took you out of Egypt and you lived in Sukkot. You lived in little huts. Be thankful you live in a nice home, but don't get carried away with your home. Better fear God. And God is just God, and then don't test God. And then we talk about Asita Yashar Vatov, Lipni Meshur Hadin. Okay, nothing to do with Pesach. I'm pointing the Torah has nothing to do with Pesach going to Israel. Then the Torah says, your child is going to ask you, what are all these laws? Nothing to do with Pesach. The kid is asking you, why do we have all these laws? The tons of laws, not about Pesach, about Judaism. So what do you tell him? Avadima Inul Verum Mitzrayim. Wow. That's what we say in the Haggadah, but in the Haggadah, that's the answer to the four questions. That's not the answer to the Chacham. Pretty wild. The Haggadah totally flipped it, right? In other words, why do we have a mezuzah? Forget it. Why do we, I don't think of any mitzvah in Torah. Why do we have tzitzis? I don't know. No, think of better mitzvahs. Why do we have any mitzvah in the Torah? It's because God took us out of Egypt. All the mitzvah in the Torah is because God took us out. Even mitzvah that have no connection. Why, to be honest, in business, the Torah does connect it to Egypt, right? But think of any mitzvah. We answer the chacham. We answer the child in the Torah. Why do we keep mitzvot? It doesn't start at Sinai. It starts in Egypt. We'll have to talk. So why doesn't the Haggadah give this answer? Why did it put it to Manishtana? Okay. And then the Torah says, "Vayitein Hashem." Of this part, we don't quote. And God put all kinds of miracles. Wow. Oh, Votano Otsi Misham. Here we go. Here's Rama Gamliel. And he took us out of Egypt. You're telling the kid. Now, in the Torah, this is the parent. Well, he's not dead. I mean, he's probably not alive anymore. But the parent who left, right, it's the next generation. That's what we're saying, even though they're not there. And God, you're telling the kid, the young kid, God took us out to bring us to the land of Israel. They're in the desert now, right? They're about to enter the land of Israel. They're about to go to Israel. So God took us out. And God commanded us to do all these mitzvot. So Misham is part of Avadim Hayinu. The Haggadah splits it. The Haggadah puts the first half. The Haggadah splits it three ways. They put Ki Shocha Bin Chamachar as the question of the Chacham. They put Avadim Hayinu as the answer to the four questions in general. And then they put Otanu Otsi Misham to explain why we have to do this in every generation, not just our ancestors left Egypt. God has redeemed us in order to bring us to that mission. So this is a really fascinating use of, you want to call it a manipulation. I don't know what words you want to call it. A drasha. Now, of course, why are they doing this? Right? That's very interesting. Why are they doing this? Why doesn't the Torah give the answer Avadim Hayinu to the question of the Chacham? My daughter Chimishudim, why do you tell them about the Apikoma? You know, guys, you know, I don't know what Judaism is. Can't eat after the Apikoma. It's like it's ridiculous. The Chacham is asking, why do we keep all the details of Judaism? There's Eidot, there's Chukim, there's Paraduma, there's Kashrut. There's everything. There's not to talk Lashon Hara, to respect my parents. Eidot, Chukim, Mishpatim. Wow. You know what? Don't eat after the Afikoman. Yes, Yocheved, what do you want to say?
So I went to Rabbi Tokayer's drasha yesterday at Kingsway. So he built his whole shiur around the idea that being a Jew means living an uncomfortable life and doing things that are out of our comfort zone. So Afikoman, the Karban Pesach, he explained was really a chok, that even though we have reasons for it, but we don't really know the deeper significance. So telling him that you can't eat after the Afikoman, keeping the taste of the Karban Pesach in your mouth, symbolizes that idea.
Very nice idea, right? We keep the taste in our mouth, right? It's a very beautiful idea, but like, give me a break. The Torah has a great answer, and the authors of that Gada don't like the answer. Or I don't know, maybe they do like the answer. They like the answer so much, they put it to the answers to four questions. In other words, the answer is so good that Avadim Ayinu, no, it's not just for a Chacham. Remember, there's no Chacham, Rasha, Tam, and Sheino Yidei Shul in the Torah. I think I said this the other day. When we say there are four children, it's a radical idea. What you're saying is this part of the Torah is for the Chacham, this part of the Torah is for the Rasha. I thought the whole Torah is for everybody. You understand what they're saying? This is the question. I don't have to pay attention. I'm not a Sheino Yodei Lishol. That's not true. But the Haggadah in a drasha is saying you have to teach each child to their own way. You're right. Every child has to be taught appropriately. And you can't teach every child everything. It is true. When you're in school, you don't teach everybody everything. So you have to choose who you're teaching, what you learn. Curriculum is really important. We're not doing such a great job. What's our curriculum? The curriculum in yeshiva is to learn Talmud. All right, I'm sorry, that's not all of Judaism, you know? And so the curriculum has to be adjusted for the Chacham. But so I think that's, so the Haggadah is saying, Avadimenu's answer to all the questions. Now, in the Haggadah, it fits in very well with the questions of the Manishtana. But you understand, in the Torah, Avadim Ayinu is the answer to why we keep all mitzvot, not just why we do this mitzvot on Pesach. Now, I have this other idea with the Chacham and the Rasha. I don't know if I mentioned this here before. The Tam and the Sheino Yodei Lishul get the same answer as the Torah. But the Chacham and the Rasha, there's also, what's the answer to the question of the Rasha and the Torah? The Rasha asks, Mavo Dazot Lachem. Okay, so I don't think I have it up. It'll take me half a minute. We'll get it. Okay. I'm sorry. What's the answer to the Chacham in the Torah? Let's go here. Give me a second here. Where is it? Let's go here.
The version is very similar. He says, the Rasha says, the Chacham.
Yeah, we're not discussing what's the difference between the Chacham and the Rasha. They both exclude, right? You're right. The questions are similar. Maybe if we have time, we'll discuss it. Okay, let me just go here. Let me get in the Hebrew and English. Okay. So I said before, that the question of the Rasha and the Torah is a very nice question. God's going to pass over. He'll see the blood on your mezuzah. That's in verse 23. And then the Torah tells us in verse 24, and this is not a one-time idea. You have to keep Pesach every year. There are certain things in Torah that are only for that time. Lots of things in Torah. We don't keep everything for Pesach every year. And Vayaki Devil Al Aretz, when God will bring to the land again, you see this idea. It's not about just leaving Egypt. It's about coming to the land of Israel. When you come to the land, keep this avodah, right? You have to keep this service that I say. So the kid's going to ask you, oh, ma'avodah, that's a nice question. Ma'avodah, oh, you tell him God passed over our hands, our homes. A beautiful answer. The Haggadah doesn't say that answer at all. The Haggadah says you're a kofar be'ikar. You're not part of the community. Lachem, for you. You're out of here, buddy. We get out. We're going to knock your teeth out. You're not part of our community, and you're a kofar be'ikar. Whoa. Where did the Haggadah come up with that? Now, where does this answer appear? I give you three guesses. Our favorite rabbi at the Seder, who only shows up later, right? The rabbi who's missing in Bnei Brak with the five rabbis because he was impeached. He had to have his own Seder, right? He can't be with the five rabbis in Bnei Brak. Back to Rabban Gamliel. Pesach zu shanu achlim al shuma. Why do we eat matzah? Why do we eat Pesach? Oh, because God passed over home. But Martha Zebach Pesach Hula. Hey, beautiful. This is a question of the Rasha. All of a sudden, the Rasha is now with Tzaddik, because The pasuk we use for the Rasha, we don't, I mean, the Haggadah doesn't give the answer, but Rabban Gamliel takes it. Now, it's obvious why the Torah, why the Haggadah has to do that. Because it's clear in the Torah, this is not a Rasha. And therefore, the Torah can't give the Rasha this answer. This is an answer to, this is the primary answer. We eat the Korban Pesach because of what we tell the Rasha. No, no, it's not because we tell the Rasha. We eat the Korban Pesach this. So why does the Haggadah turn, why does that guy that turn that Mabodan into being a Rasha? So that's an interesting question. What hint is there that that's a question of the Rasha? Maybe we'll come back to that. But you notice the Haggadah substitutes the answers. They give their own answer to the Rasha and their own answer of the Chacham. The Tam and the Sheinoi and Daily Shul, just to show it here, just to show you. The Tam and Sheinoya de Lishol, where are we going here? Exodus, yeah. Are exactly as written in the Torah. Tam and the Sheinoya de Lishol are in chapter 13, verse 8. Okay. Vikadatala bin Chabayamahu, the kid doesn't ask a question, so you got to tell him. That's the Sheinoya de Lishol. And five verses later, Vayaki shilchava chamacharle mor mazot. What's this? Tell him bechozak. Yeah, that's the question of the Tam. The Tam and the Sheinoi Deh, we leave the same. We change the Chacham and the Rasha. Why? I may have mentioned this recently, but I guess not because nobody. Okay. Why do we change the answer to the Chacham and the Rasha? So what the Rasha, I already said we have to. I think because in the Torah that's not a Rasha. It's so much not a Rasha that Rabbi Gamliel uses the answer to tell us why we eat the Korban Pesach. Okay, you can say, maybe he is a Rasha and we give him the real answer. Okay, maybe. Maybe, but why not use that answer? And why not use the answer of Avdi Mayinu for the Chacham? Okay, we want the Manishtana. We can use it more than once, as we'll see. We use things more than once in the Haggadah. So I thought this is in my original idea, but so you can take it or leave it. I think it's my original idea. We're assuming the Chacham and the Rasha are bright or equals. Just one is following the ways of the Torah and one is chosen to reject the path of the Torah. The Tam and Sheinoi Deh Shul are more simple. We're going to take the idea Tam is simple. He may be pure, but he's simple. And the Sheinoi Deh Shul, they don't know very much. So you can't give them complicated answers. The Chacham and the Rasha are intelligent people. And what I think is the Haggadah is telling us a very, very important pedagogical lesson, one which we failed at in the 20th century. When Jews came from Europe here, and I'm not blaming them, but it was still a failure, many, many great rabbis could not adjust to America. They were lost. I understand. It was such a different, especially people who went through the Holocaust, who didn't choose to come here. And they got here, they could never adjust. And the American kids are very different, you know. The NHL playoffs started last night. Like in Europe, nobody talked about how Toronto Maple Leafs can never beat the Boston Bruins. You know, when they play Boston, that's the end of the Maple Leaf season. They got blown out 5-1 yesterday. Everybody knows that. No, in the shtetl in Poland, some guy who got smicha isn't talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. I remember years ago, Beryl Wine saying, I heard him talk at a lecture, and he said something about, it's hard to produce a gadolim with the New York Yankees. Like, I don't remember his exact expression. We live in it. That's not totally true. Bravar Lichtenstein was a tremendous gaon in baseball. I'm sure everybody knows that. Gaonic in baseball, knew everything. And he was a gadol b'Torah. Okay, you can do it. You can do it. You can be a baseball fan and be a gadol b'Torah. Anyways, so the problem is they didn't know. They couldn't answer. Why do we do this? That's how we did it in Europe. You know what? Mm-hmm. Most Americans, that's how we did it in Europe. I don't care. That's not for me. And they left. And people left Judaism in droves. But God is telling us that the answer in every generation has to change. Even the answers of the Torah, quote unquote, aren't good enough for all times. You have to know how to adjust and talk to the people of their time. The Chacham and the Rasha, the questions are always the same. Why be Jewish? Why do we have to keep these? Fine question. But you can't give him a stand pat answer that was given 3,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago, or even what's going on in Israel. You have to adjust. You know what? American is different than Israel. And I've said that many times. It's inappropriate to have a rabbi. Those of you, us who live in the state in Canada, North America, which I assume is most of us here, should not be asking questions to rabbis in Israel. You have to have a personal rabbi. That's what it means, a mar datra. Because a personal rabbi knows, you know, I've spoken before, that these internet shilas is terrible. It's terrible. People ask the rabbi on the internet, the rabbi doesn't know you. So yeah, certain questions, you don't have to know the person, but anything to do with anything relating to you, which is 95% of questions. Somebody asked me this week, I won't say who, he's here. So he asked me a question. Could he start the Seder a little bit earlier? Because you got little kids at the Seder, maybe we can say the night starts at Shkia. That's not a question you can ask on the internet to some rabbi. It's not an answer. It's not one answer fits all. You have to know who's at your Seder, what the conditions are. So everything has to be individualized. So I think that's what the Haggadah is really pointing out. That the Chacham and the Rashi were even going to change the answers of the Torah. It's got to be different. Oh, it's beautiful what the Torah says in the right context, in Rabban Gamliel, in the answer to Manishtana. But you got to change. I don't know. I think this is, you can tell me if anybody disagrees, I'd like to hear, have any comments on that. But I really think that's a powerful one. Talmud Sheino Yodei Halachot was simple, people. I remember years when I was in Gros Kollel at Jewish University, 40 years ago almost already. So Rabbi Rakepet, who still Baruch Hashem is going strong. So I remember he taught us how he started this course on Machal Gold. About, you know, faith and questions, you know, questions that a lot of kids are struggling with. And I remember him telling us, this is not for a Beis Yaakov, a nice, pure, sweet Beis Yaakov girl who just believes in Das Torah and accepts what the Gedolim say. It's a different way of life than I think and many other people think. But if it works for them, we don't want to expose them to this stuff. It's too dangerous. They'll be exposed. They'll go off. They won't be able to handle it. It really is true. But for people who grew up in the real world, and in the real world, yeah, in the outside world, and being exposed to ideas, to science, to social trends, and today everybody's exposed. That's the problem. Everybody is exposed to it. You can't give them these very pure, tmimistic answers. That's what I think. Yes, Yocheved, you want to disagree with me? I hope.
Maybe a little, so forgive me, but
I encourage you. That's why we learn together.
So if we're saying that the Haggadah is saying we should tailor make our answers and not just
have one line. The Haggadah is very personal in every generation.
Right. So I just want to point out, but maybe this is because the Haggadah was written, you know, many years before our time, that the answer to the Chacham and the Rasha are not very nuanced. The Rasha, you blow him out of the water, tell him he's an apikores, and the Chacham, like go and learn, you know, lumdus.
I hear you.
That was maybe true once upon a time, but
that's correct. So I didn't read it yet, but I get Norman Lambs, Dr. Lambs, you know, they send me, I'm on the list every week, at Russia. So I just read the first paragraph, I've been very busy. So, I'm talking about the Russia. Yeah, I say we should invite the Russia to the Seder. That's what we have to in our chairman. We invite the Russian Seder. We knock his teeth out. Well, we invited this guy and say, we can't get out of here. You know what? We interpret the Russia differently. I agree. There is a time where the Russia, we knock out his teeth and we tell him he's a kofar. And there's a time where we tell the Russia that we welcome the Russia. We're happy he's at the Seder. Now, what do we tell the Russia? By the way, I mentioned this on Friday, I think. What makes the Russia a kofar? Why is the Russia a kofar, according to the Haggadah?
Hi, Rabbi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
I just want to mention a tiny short comment. That I hope that the people here know that the real translation of Hakeyat Shinav is not what people think, knock his teeth out.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it means to blunt his teeth. It doesn't mean to knock them out. That is correct. Hakey, that's an interesting question. What does Hakey mean? Right. So he's a Russian. So Tziyat Tzmo Min HaKlal. Tziyat Tzmo Min HaKlal. Right. That's not a religious thing. That's a nationalistic thing. Not religious. Did I mention the Rambam? The Rambam in Hilchot Teshuva says a guy can keep all the mitzvot of the Torah. He can be the firmest person in the world. But if he doesn't participate in the community, he doesn't feel their sorrow and rejoice in the joys of the community, that person loses their share in the world to come. The Rambam Paskin, if you don't believe me, it's in Hilchot Teshuva Perek Gimel, where the Rambam talks about who loses their share in the world to come.
So that means that this year we need to be extra specially careful to really drop the wine out of our glasses out of our cups to be thinking about those poor hostages and the hostage families.
I'm getting there.
And the families of the soldiers who have lost their lives, the ones who are extremely firm and the ones who are completely secular.
That's 100% correct. By the way, I'm sure many of you have received them. Many of you are wondering what you should add to the Pesach Seder. I just saw Reverend Moen sent out something to add. Of course, we have to. That's what the Seder changes every year. That's why we're. That was the problem with you know printing, when many rabbis were against the printing press. You know, the Maral's brother had all attack, like the rabbis had on the internet, because they understood printing. When something's written, like, oh my gosh, like everybody knows, art scroll is the final post-it. Like, that's not Judaism. But what can you do? We're so fixed into the text, you don't have to say every word in the Haggadah. Yeah, better say Rabbi Gamliel Omer. Yeah, that you have to say. You can skip the four questions. I mean, you don't have to say every word in the Haggadah. It's a discussion. It's making it, Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Lirod Et Atzmo. So you have to make it personal. I told you once, Rabbi Tender, when I was in YU in the 80s, so Rabbi Tender said, you have to talk about the Iran-Iraq war. What's the impact? Obviously, we're going on what's going on in Israel. If you don't do that in your Seder this year, I don't know what exactly. You have to figure out exactly what you're... Some people in Israel, they're leaving an empty chair or saying extra tefillah. But, I mean, we had always in our Seder, it was really one of the most moving parts in the Seder in our home. We would, my father would read, you know, the second night for the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. I think it's printed in Jonathan Sachs's Haggadah. I haven't seen it printed anywhere else. I think he has it printed, especially that was the night of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. That's right before Eliyahu HaNavi, and we sing Ani Ma'amin. Of course, you have to personalize the Holocaust and read about everything. So I'm saying you have to personalize the answers. And maybe it's your Haggadah. Maybe today there are 8 children. You know, we have so nuanced. You know, we have the LGBT kid who is religious, and then we have the kid, you know, the secular kid on a kibbutz, and then we have the kids in the we're in Mount Everest for the Haggadah, the biggest Seder in the world, and Everest in there, and the Babich. We have an insane Jewish world. There's so many different. We're not limited to 4 types of children. So you have to know that's the message of the Haggadah. And that's what I said. We failed. I'm not blaming anybody, but the bottom line is we failed. If Judaism is so beautiful, which is what I hope we all believe, and it's so wonderful, so why are so few people embracing it? So part of it is our behavior. Part of it is our ethics are not what they should be, right? This Rav Soloveitchik always said, no one's going to become observant because you're machmir and Shabbos and Kashrut. Nobody cares. But if you're machmir in business ethics, that might make a difference. Right, if you're machmir in the not taking revenge and maybe you'll convince your secular business partner or your clients to be cool. And maybe if you invite them over for a Shabbos meal in the Pesach Seder, but instead of yelling, right, we cannot kick out the Rush anymore. And no lesser authority than the Chazon Ish said that. I mean, we understand today attitudes towards non-observance have to change. And if people don't recognize that, well, I think they misunderstand Judaism. Are you going to tell me in the Shulchan Aruch, you're going to tell me the Rambam says you throw somebody into a pit and you don't give him any water and you let him die? I'm sorry, we don't do things like that anymore. Thank God. Right? And we have to have different attitudes towards all these people. Okay. Anyways, let me go on a few other things. Okay, I was going to get there later. I see it's okay, running out of time. But the dipping of the wine, yes, of course. So you're saying for the soldiers and those who were killed, Rahman al-Islam, and the families and all the suffering going on. So I want to raise a question. Please don't shoot me. I want to raise a question. Who do we dip out the wine for at the Seder? Why do we remove the wine?
Usually for the Mitzrayim.
For the Egyptians.
Bin Pala Yivcha al Tismach.
Yeah. So we do it for the Egyptians. We're not doing it for the Jews who suffered. We're doing it for the Egyptians who suffered. No, the Egyptians who suffered. I don't think the Palestinians are any worse than the Egyptians. In other words, we are sad. Now, yes, we have to fight evil. Here's the nuance that people don't always understand. We can lament the fact, and we can cry, and we can dip our wine that our enemies are suffering. That doesn't mean we don't fight our enemies. We have no choice. We're lamenting the fact that we have to We have to fight them. And we do have to feel the pain of our enemies. That's what Judaism says. That's called the Meir's famous line about we can forgive the Arabs for killing us. I mean, I don't know exactly, but we can't forgive them for making us kill them. And that's the Jewish way. The Jewish way is we feel pain. Now, there are two verses, just very quickly, there are two verses in Mishle that relate to this. So most people know the verse. I obviously have at the end. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. There's a second half of the passage. This is Mishle. And then he falls over himself, your heart shouldn't rejoice. Penyarash, it's very interesting what the next verse continues. The next one will be, okay, it's independently, you shouldn't be happy. But then the Mishle, Shlomo Melech continues, Penyarash Hashem, lest God see. And it's going to be evil in his eye. Remember, God got angry at the angels. Masayat they told him the yam. Batamamrim Shira, God got really mad at the angels for singing at the Yamsuf. So they're God's creations. They're created with Tzelem Elohim too, also the Egyptians. And so God will be bad. And God will get angry at you. When you rejoice, when you have to kill your enemy, even have to kill your enemy, and you're happy about it, God's going to get angry at you. And unfortunately, this happens. This does happen tragically. At the same time, the Torah, the same Mishle, a few verses earlier, actually. This is 16 chapters earlier. When it's good for the tzaddikim, everybody's jumping for joy. When the evil are defeated, there is joy in the land. So you can say these verses contradict each other on one level. And many years ago, I remember Rabbi Basil Herring. I didn't have time to look up the article, but I remember years ago, Rabbi Basil was the, I haven't spoken for a while, but he was the head of the RCA for a while, a very, very prominent rabbi, is South African originally. So Rabbi Herring wrote a whole article on the contradiction. When do we say what? So it may depend for evil. For the Nazis, maybe we say the Fabod Rishar Marina, depends on the enemy. Different ways to sort of bring the psukim together. But it's not really a contradiction. We have to get rid of evil, and there's joy, but we can't rejoice. I mean, I know that's a problem. It's a rena, but so maybe it is contradiction, but we can't rejoice that we have to do it. So when we take out the wine, we have to think of our enemies. That's what it's not to think. Of course, we have to think of the Jews of the Seder. Obviously, that's our main focus, but that's not our only focus. And by the way, God got angry at the angels for singing when they crossed the Yam Suf, but he didn't get angry at the Jewish people. We do sing. We say, as I shared, as a matter of fact, it's the only part of the Torah besides Shema that made it into our Seder on a daily basis. Brandon, we say the Shira every day. So when as I shared, Moshe, at the Shira, he go, oh God, but sus v'rachlo ramah v'yam, right, that the Egyptians, Amari, Eber, Tafasi, Gachalek, Shalal, and we're, so we do sing Shira. The angels had no right to sing because they didn't suffer. The Jewish people who suffered, they had a right to sing. The slaves, so it's a complex issue, but it's one that as Jews, we have to think about it. Like everything is complex. That's what it means to be a Jew. That the Haggadah is teaching us the complexity of everything. That's why the Haggadah is moving everything around. This pasuk is here, this pasuk is there. The Haggadah is like redoing everything. So they did for that generation. So every generation has to redo the Haggadah in their own way. I know that sounds a little bit too whatever. I don't know, but there's a lot of truth to that. Okay, so that's well, I did want to point out. I don't know why, maybe not so important, but that pasuk Bavur Zeh Hashem Li B'Tzeiti Mitzrayim appears, I believe, four times in the Haggadah. It's an amazing thing. I'll just quickly show you, and then we'll talk, right? That pasuk, and then we'll talk about that, and then we'll have to end. Where are we going here? So, Bavur Zeh Asah Hashem Li B'Tzeiti Mitzrayim. Okay, so that pasuk is first said by the Rasha, which, of course, is out of context, because what I showed you, this is the Sheinah Yodei Shol. The Torah, the Haggadah, clearly wants to link the person who doesn't know any questions to somebody who might turn into a Rasha, obviously, because they quote the same verse. If the Haggadah takes the same verse, Bavur Zeh, from the Sheino Yodei Lishol, and puts it into the Rasha, there's obviously deep connection there. So that's twice we use that pasuk. Then we go to Yachol Rosh Chodesh. We use it a third time. Bavur Zeh. Right? Bavur Zeh, got to be at night. Got to be Dafka at night. And then, of course, it's what I showed you with Rabban Gamliel. That matzah, that Bechol Dor Vador Chayav Adam L'Rodot Lo, Bavur Zeh, Asa Hashem Livet Seitim Mitzrayim. So you see, this pasuk is used in totally different ways. It's used as something very negative with the Rasha, and it's used as something very positive, as us seeing how, you know, we have to leave Egypt. This is the same thing, matzah, freedom. It's a freedom of slavery. Everything can be used in different ways. But it's fascinating how that same pasuk gets used all over the place. And in the, you know, in that God, and the way they divide up the psukim. One last point, by the way, on the Chacham and the Rasha, is who should be the opposite of the Rasha? That's why Rabbi Schwartz last week, this year, Rabbi Schwartz this year, something very interesting. He linked the Chacham and the Sheino Edelishol, the one who's very bright and the one who doesn't even know what to ask, and the Tam and the Rasha. Two are intellectual, two are more moral. And he defined Tam, which is also true as Yaakov Ish Tam. Tam is pure. So the Rasha is evil or bad, whatever. I don't know, whatever word you want to use nowadays. And the Tam is pure. So the other moral opposites and the intellectual opposites are the Chacham Sheino Yedei Lishol. It's a very interesting way to divide it. I think most people tend to divide a Chacham Rasha, Tam Sheino Yedei Lishol. Good. Okay. So Tam Sheino Yedei Lishol, I already explained, they're the two simple kids. We just give them the answer of the Torah. So when Rasha and Chacham don't go together, what should it be? Rasha and Tzaddik. Rasha and Tzaddik. Right? If we're contrasting the Rasha, so it's a tzaddik. Why do we call him a chacham?
Well, I'm listening to today, and I think that Russia is a very loaded word, and loaded in the sense that it can have a more meaning, and it can have, for lack of any better term, an intellectual meaning. Like if you're living in Europe in the 19th century, you consider Muskegon to be
right. Right. Yeah. So if you want to see, I mean, this is a fascinating thing. Just look through Haggadahs and see how the Rasha is depicted. And that will tell you who's the other. It's amazing. I have seen Haggadah, by the way, talking about, I see when the least, when the cup, the Mashiach will come. Yes. I think the Mashiach will come first. But,
I agree with you.
Haggadah, the Rasha is like an athlete, you know, like every, and some he's a chayal. I mean, that's awful to say that, but I mean, he's a chiloni Jew. Is he? I mean, it's all over the place, but the Rasha is, you got to be very careful. I like the view of the Chazon Ish. Nobody today is a Rasha. That we don't have Rasham today. That's really what the poskim say. But let's leave that aside for a moment. We don't have true Rasham today. We really don't. And we have to reach out to them. All the halachic authorities, normal ones, all say that. Even in the Haredi world, it's not just the modern Orthodox thing. But I think the simple answer is, a chacham means you have to be a tzaddik. Judaism never values wisdom on its own. Wisdom has to be used for moral purposes, which is something really important now with AI. And, you know, we're going to destroy the world with AI if we're not careful. You know, wisdom is very, like everything in life. I say that all the time. Everything in Judaism, matzah, everything can be used for good or for bad. Wisdom can be used for very terrible things. So a chacham in Judaism means a tzaddik. But Judaism doesn't just want you to be a tzaddik. That's the difference. Being a pious person is not enough. You have to be a chacham. We, it's Talmud Torah connected kulam. We don't say tzaddik connected kulam. We extol this value of studying Torah, of being a learned person. Of course, if the learned person is not a tzaddik, then the learning is not worth very much. That can be very dangerous. Let me just say one point to sort of almost contradict a little what I said, which is, I think is good. I want to point out why I said, why does the Haggadah consider this person a Rasha? We'll end soon. But why does that? It's not a Rasha in the Torah. It's a beautiful answer. It's a beautiful question. The Torah says, keep the Sabotah versus Matzah Sabotah. We give a beautiful answer that Rabban Gamliel uses. So what hint, what is there about the Rasha that, what is that about that verse, which I still think the Pshat is not that it's a Rasha, but what is there, something there that the authors of the Haggadah somehow thought we're talking about a Rasha?
They blinked away.
I'm sorry? So let's take a look carefully at the Pasuk. And I should really put it next to the Chacham's question, because you'll see you can really only appreciate this if you see the Chacham next to it. Yeah, okay, great. Okay. Well, let's look at the Chacham first. Ki shacha bimcha machar lemor. Okay. Now you have the Rasha. Look at that question. There are three differences. There are five words, but there are three differences.
The Rasha is telling you, not asking you.
There you go. Vayaki amru alechem. The Chacham asks, the Rasha says. Vayaki amru. So I don't really know that that's really, really true in the Pshat, but when you put it next to the Chacham, the authors are like, oh, it's beautiful. The Rasha says, the Chacham asks. Two other differences.
Shem Elokeinu.
No, I'm talking only in the question, in the lead up to the question. Okay, I hear, yeah, the Chacham asks more.
It's
that's
plural.
All true. But I'm saying
Bneichem is plural.
Excellent. And Bincha is singular. Why is that important?
It's not so personal. It's a group.
At Columbia University recently, or rallies, or all this stuff that goes on. People do things in a crowd they would
differently,
never do.
The sociology of a crowd.
Right, mob psychology. People do evil in crowds that they will never do on their own. It's very easy, you know, when a bunch of people, so the Rasha, B'neichem, oh, you know, Batik Ravna, like Kulchem, Moshe by the Moroccan, you all came to me yelling and screaming. One person is nice. And so, Vayat, it's the plural, the singular, and there's one other difference. Which
Lachem?
No, that, well, that's the one. The Haggadah points out, right? I'm talking about that before that. Uh-huh. Right. It's not really, right. But yeah, it's not really true. I mean, yeah, the Haggadah points out, is Etchem and Lachem really so different? Again, maybe, but we don't have to, what is the other difference? There's an extra word. Where can I find it here? Where did I put him? Where's the Chacham? Machar. Machar. Tomorrow. Ezehu Chacham, Haroed Hanolad. That's B5. It's not just Hello, made me call it. That one who sees the future. The Chacham thinks about tomorrow. We all know what it's like. We live in a society, people don't save for retirement. They don't do anything. They think for the moment. The Chacham is always thinking ahead. The Rasha is today, the here and now. I want now. I think it's really, I really like that. But so anyways, I hope all I did today is totally confuse you. That why do we eat matzah? Did the matzah change from being the bread of redemption to the bread of slavery because we went to exile and therefore we begin the halakmanya? Oh no, really, this is the bread of exile, but really it should be Rabban Gamliel's bread. What just happened here? I don't know what happened here. Whose screen? Does anybody see the screen? I don't know. Did your screen change?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I have no idea. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anyways, I don't know what happened there, but okay, we're back to normal. Okay, so we discussed the matzah change historically, and that's a halak manya. Really, the matzah, the maror is a rabbinic mitzvah today, and the matzah also would be a rabbinic mitzvah today, but there's a separate verse. We eat matzah as part of the Pesach and maror. And then matzah is really great. They're really bread. It's like a cracker. You're eating it as a side thing with the beautiful meat. It's wonderful. It's all redemption. Once the no more Korban Pesach, so we don't have marah. The rabbis didn't want you to eat marah alone. Marah, you got to be tempered with other ingredients. Matzah alone doesn't taste so good anymore, but it's a totally different matzah. It's matzah not related to the Korban Pesach. It's halakmanya. And then And so the Seder, of course, changed a lot, as we all know. And then we said the idea of leaving each of them coming to Israel, and that's what Rabbi Gamliel says, Bechol Dor Bador, Chayvadim L'Rodot Atzmo, and then the quote, Tumpsukim, Botanik Tzimisham, which is the continuation of Abadim Hayinu, right? We know Abadim Hayinu, but continued a verse later is what Rabbi Gamliel says, or Bechol Dor Bador, Chayvadim L'Rodot Atzmo, right? And we saw that Abadim Hayinu was taken as the answer to the question of the Chacham, which is not about Pesach, it's about the Torah in general, but moved by the authors of the Haggadah to the answer of the four questions. It makes sense in the context of the Haggadah. We then discuss what it means you didn't fulfill your obligation. You didn't fulfill your obligation to tell the story. That's the simple explanation. You got to tell the story. And we don't tell it in order of Maror or Pesach Matzah, but we tell it in importance, order of importance, Pesach Matzah Maror. Pesach is more important than the Korban Pesach. It's the Iser Kari. If you miss it when the time the temple stood. But we also said it could mean that you don't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, if you don't explain why you eat the matzah. That's a fascinating idea, which we said the Torah already quotes by Hilchot Sukkos, as it says, Leman Yedu, you must know, we showed the comparison Sukkos, we ate matzah in Sukkot. In Sukkot, the name of the place, and of course, the Sukkot as the hat. Pesach and Sukkot, of course, go together. We separate them a lot, but they really should be at the same time. We have to think about the message of Sukkot, which, by the way, is also a message of welcome everybody. Kol Ezrach Yeshuv B'Sukkot Ushpizin, we welcome everybody. We're outside. Exactly the same message of Pesach, of welcoming everybody. And then we spoke a little bit about the four kids and, you know, what makes the Chacham and the Rasha, and why he's not. And again, the changing how the Haggadah changed the answer. The Rasha's answer again goes to Rabbi Gamliel while we ate Pesach, because in the context of the question, he's not really a Rasha. Despite the fact that I showed you, he says it and it's in plural, it's Machar. Okay. That gave the rabbis this sort of, on a drush level, that we're talking about a Rasha. And of course, we said, yes, the definition of Rasha changes over time. And we live in a generation where it would be a huge mistake to consider any Jew to be a Rasha. We can, it doesn't mean we think they're right, but we can't exclude them. We have to try to welcome everybody. We have to try to teach it a bit. And that maybe is hard, especially somebody, know, with the war going on in Israel and, you know, what the Jewish voices for peace. I mean, they're pro-Hamas. It's like, it's a problem. But still, we have to try to teach them, because we pour out wine even for our enemies. Where we have to fight our enemies. But what Rosh Hashanah, when the enemies are destroyed, there's joy. But we're not happy about that. Those who suffer can sing. Those who don't suffer can't sing. I don't know how that applies today with things going on. I really don't. But you know, as a Jewish people, we can sing about Egypt. But the modern stuff, you're not affected. You can't rejoice when your enemy's downfall. I don't know. I don't know what that means for Jews who live outside of Israel and their relationship to the Palestinians. I really don't know what that means. An Israeli has it's a whole different thing. They can rejoice much more when they wipe out the, you know, when whatever. I don't know. But I think it's an important question that if we're honest with ourselves, we have to think about it. What does it mean? And what does it mean we're not allowed to oppress the Egyptians? And 36 times the Torah tells us, remember you were strange in the land of Egypt, don't mistreat people. You know, Egypt is negative, they're throwing babies in the Nile, but they're not going to think, welcome Rabbi Liebtag, how are you? Just see, so he showed up, and that Rabbi Liebtag will be giving class at 11:15. So anyway, so I what else did we discuss? I think that was pretty much it. That's why I could welcome Rabbi Liebtag. Okay. Anyways, thank you very much, and I want to wish everybody a Chag Sameach. Rabbi Liebtag will be talking in 15 minutes on Kriya Satorah on Pesach. So everybody's welcome to stay. I'll just we'll keep on the same channel. Oh, just let me take a very, very quick look. There it goes. Oh, see Rabbi Slifkin's article on the olive sides. Yes, yes, yes. So that's, of course, Chaim Soloveitchik's famous article, Rupture and Reconstruction, how the size of the olive has changed. Let's put it this way. Somebody asked me, I don't have a chart where I take a piece of matzah and put it on a thing to make sure it's 8x10 or I don't know how big. The maror, it's a kizayit. Why that changed is a fascinating study in sociology, which is exactly what Chaim Soloveitchik did in his article. It was only in the 1950s that the size of the olive began to change. And we have to eat a kizayit, meaning approximately. We do live in a more mathematical generation, more exact measures people didn't live in, but it is, but I just say what Rav Schechter told us, you have to eat normal. Eat a kizayit means to eat a normal amount of food in a normal amount of time, not to eat six pieces of matzah in 2 minutes. You know, I've been to That is, you know, like that. No, well, the design is like 16 pieces of matzah, and kedei achila pras, you have to eat it in the. So that's 2 minutes. So you gotta like that's insane. That's not normal. That's almost depending on how extreme you do it. That's just a farcical making of Judaism. Judaism wants people to be normal. So what do you mean a normal amount of matzah in a normal amount of time? So if your shear is much bigger, so you want to say a kazai today is a matzah. Okay, fine, it's a matzah. Okay, but you don't have to stuff it down your throat in 3 minutes. But whatever, you can ask your own local Orthodox rabbi how big his olive trees are. But just grow olive trees in the backyard. You see how big an olive is. And so you see how much matzah you have to eat. Okay, and olives, yeah, I don't know how much they changed. Their version of the Pesach matzah tomorrow is reversed, okay? I don't have those versions. Okay, but you can send them. Why have to have more? Because we have to have more. We have to remember our bitterness. That's what I said. If we don't remember slavery, freedom is can be misused. That's so important in Judaism. We have to remember our past. We don't forget our past. Lots of people like to forget their past. They like to forget they grew up in poverty. Lots of people, the rags to riches story. So some of the rags to riches, some of the riches they remember, and they give a lot to the poor because they remember. And some people who go rags to riches don't want to have anything to do with their past. They leave that world behind. So the Torah insists we do the first, that we have to have it together. Maybe Monday and Russia's come on. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's saying, okay, how is Mani Shtana not obligatory? It says in the Gemara. Yeah. You need to ask yourself, right? But if you look in the Gemara, as we showed on Friday, it says like this, Maskulo Kosheni, they pour for him a second cup. I'll show it to you right now. They pour for him a cup of wine. I think I kept it open. Let me just see. They pour for him a cup of wine. There we go. Mazgulo Kosheni. Where is it here? I know it's here. Yeah. Bechana ben Shuel. And now the kid asks. Be ain't that bevein. If the kid doesn't know how to ask, his father teaches him. Manishtana. But if the kid does know how to ask, he doesn't say Manishtana. That's why I give Manishtana to a 3-year-old. If the kid knows how to ask, it's only for the kid who doesn't know how to ask. We say Manishtana. And then if you take a look in the Gemara, the Gemara says, yeah, they have to ask. It doesn't say what they ask. Sholim Zelazet. They have to ask questions, but not the Manishtana. That's whatever the questions. Here they have. So, okay, I can show, let me just see if the Gemara is right here. Yeah, here it is. A servant who his master let him go free. But Yavla, he gives him kasva b'zadava, gives him gold and silver. Ma b'ayla meymar. What does he have to say? Amar lei b'ayla oduya. He has to give thank you and praise. Obviously, that's a reference. God took us out of Egypt, got gold and silver. We have to give thank. Amar lei patar tamila mar manishtana. I don't have to say manishtana. You already asked me a question. I gave an answer. We don't say manishtana. Patach b'mar b'dimaginu. Amazing. Amazing. So Rav Nachman, he skipped manishtana. They asked the slave the question. Slave gave a nice answer. Good, fine, no Manishtana. I don't recommend you do that at your Seder. I recommend you say Manishtana. Nobody's going to skip Manishtana, but it's important to know. It's not so important. What's important is to make the Seder relevant. Rav Nachman asked his slave, notice the question there. What does a slave do good for? You got to make who's sitting at your Seder? The question got to be, you can't sit there, give a lamdish shir. If you're a bunch of Talmidei Chachamim, yeshiva boys, having your Seder in Valashin, which I'm sure some did, not everybody went home in Valashin. So if the Netziv is running your Seder in Valashin, you can have a Lamdish Seder. What's Yashir and a Lamdish and Rav Chaim? And what's it between Zecher Yitzim Mitzrayim and Tzipur Yitzim Mitzrayim? All the Lamdish Torah that they have on the Haggadah. But if you're talking to your 6-year-old grandson or your 10-year-old kid, or you're talking to your non-religious neighbor, your intermarried cousin, it's a very, very different Seder. And I was really moved that on Friday, right after our class on Friday, I said, I had to go teach and chat. So one of the kids in my class, who's, you know, she's an amazing girl that's not totally Orthodox. And she said to me, she's going to be running her second Seder in that, and she's in charge of the Seder. And she wanted my advice because there are going to be a few, like her 5-year-old twin cousins are coming, and they're going to be these non-religious Jewish adults. And how should she conduct the Seder to get everybody interested? Well, I said, I wish I knew that that's the task of the person running the Seder to get everybody interested, make it meaningful for all. If not, That's the Seder. Seder is very current. It's got to be b'chol dor v'darachan d'rodat atzmo kilu hu yatsa mitzrayim. So what impacts you? What is your Egypt? What is your thing that you're enslaved to? What are you leaving for freedom? So yes, that don't get caught up in all the words in the Haggadah. You have to say Rabban Gamliel. You have to eat matzah. You have to say Omad. You have to do the lavan part, the part that the people do the least amount. Mavike, because that the Mishnah says v'dorish me'arami oved avi. So that's the part I was planning to do in today's shiur, but we never got there. Say Omad, that's that you have to say. But if you don't say the story of the five rabbis in Bnei Brak, I'm not saying you shouldn't say it, but nothing will happen. If you have a whole discussion and you don't have time, whatever. Okay, so you didn't say that there were five rabbis having a seder all night in Bnei Brak. Or the Rabbi Lezer ben Azari quoted Ben Zon, it's not so important. Like, it's not, and you don't have to talk about that. The Makot, there were 250 and 250. Very nice, but that's not the end of Seder. I know. Am I making sense? Okay, but you don't like it. I'm too radical. What can I tell you?
No, no. Well, no, it's interesting. The Manishtan, I saw how you read the Gemara that it doesn't mean literally you have to say those four questions. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Just let me see. Each of us times each of the sons. Yeah, I mentioned that before, that each one of us is all of the four children. 100%. We all have element. And I think that's good. We all try to rush as a rebellious. It's good to have a rebellious side. I said the teenager, right? When you're born, you're Shino, then as you become a little kid, you're a tum. Kids are pure, innocent. You know, kids are nice and innocent. Become a teenager, you're a little rebellious. It's good. That's the way you should be. And then hopefully you grow up to a chacham. And that's why the Torah is no punishment till the age of 20. We mentioned that before. Torah, because a teenager is not really an adult yet. You cannot hold him to blame. Like, it's not true at 13 he's fully an adult. He's fully an adult. He can daven, he can lay, but he's not, he's obligated to do mitzvah, but he's not fully an adult that he's mature enough to understand. Okay, Eliyahu Melamed, who was the co-founder with me for Torah in Motion, by the way. He made Aliyah a number of years ago, but gave a lecture on the history of spilling the wine. In previous times, it was a sign that it shouldn't happen to us. It was followed by a photo of Pututu. Okay, very nice. And another guy with drawing of the rush of the gangster with the cigar in his mouth. Yeah. Okay. That's a better one. That's okay. I don't know what you're sending me here. Some link I'll have to copy paste and see what that is. Thank you. Okay. I noticed we have Chagajia joining us today. The Kabbalah Club. I don't know what that's talking about. Okay. I don't know what you're referring
well,
to.
Well, if you look at the pictures, we've got a dog and a cat.
Oh, and where? Here, people.
Right.
Okay. And
Rabbi Kelman?
Yes.
Do you have time for a short comment?
Very short.
Rabbi
Leitag is starting in 6 minutes, so that's why.
So where can I see your next lecture? Where do I have a link?
Yeah. By the way, I'll do my regular Friday shiur this Friday. Again, we'll do something on Pesach, but this Friday 9:15, our regular shiur will have.
You said you have in a few minutes another Zoom lecture?
Yes. Rabbi Menachem Leitag, who speaks every Sunday at 11:15, is giving a shiur on the Kriyat HaTorah for Pesach. So, yeah.
Okay, because you mentioned that the 13-year-old is not really an adult.
Correct.
So it's fascinating. A professor in Bar Ilan, Gilat, he argues that the bar mitzvah didn't exist in the times of the Chazal.
Bar mitzvah was a little until America. America invented
it. No, but I'm saying the whole idea that the 13-year-old, you become a gadol at the age of 13.
It's not clear where that comes from. Correct. As far as we know, it's not right. And it was never celebrated. I mean, everybody, a bar mitzvah in Europe meant you had a little, the mother didn't go to shul. Even the father went with the kid. They gave him an aliyah and had some herring, and that was the bar mitzvah. Today in America, we made a big deal. That's a whole other discussion. As we like to say, there's a lot of bar often and not so much of the mitzvah, but okay, what can you do? But on the other hand, it gave people, that's why they went to Hebrew school. It's a complicated issue. Okay, we're going to stop here. Wish everybody a Chag Sameach and everybody be well. Thank you very much. And it should be meaningful. We should have peace in Israel.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all. Okay, be well. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay, I'm going to leave the screen on for Rabbi Leitag.
Thank you. Have a
Chag kasher v'sameach.
Chag sameach. Thank you. Thank you very much.